I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is Tech Central's TCS Legends, powered by Mitel. For all your unified communications and customer experience needs, visit Mitel at mitel.com. Now, today's guest on TCS Legends is none other than Ivan Epstein, the co-founder and former CEO of Softline Group, the accountancy software company founded all the way back in 1988. Softline was, of course, listed on the JSE for a time. It was eventually acquired by the London-listed Sage Group. Softline was probably best known for its brilliant line of accounting software aimed at mid-sized companies. But there's a lot more to the story, and it's a fascinating story, not only about a very successful South African tech company, but also the people behind it, including, of course, Ivan himself. But I'm not conducting today's interview. Rather, I'm handing over the reins to none other than our first guest on TCS Legends, Duarte da Silva, who needs a little introduction to our audience. So without further ado, it's over to Duarte and his guest on TCS Legends today, Ivan Epstein. Do enjoy the interview. And remember, you can subscribe to TCS Legends and all of Tech Central's other market-leading podcast productions. You can do that on YouTube at youtube.com/TechCentral, or simply search for Tech Central in your favorite podcasting app. Now over to Duarte and Ivan. Enjoy the show.
Now, our guest in TCS Legends today is Ivan Epstein. Welcome, Ivan.
How are you doing?
Ivan and I had the pleasure of meeting one another in the late 90s. I can't quite remember the date. It was 96 or 97. But Ivan was bringing his company Softline to the market. It listed or reversed into a cash shell by the name of Benoni, which was an ex-gold company. Ivan, perhaps maybe just go through those early days, perhaps why you decided to list, you and your partners, and in particular why. In the heyday of tech, the decision was taken to do a reverse listing rather than go directly as a listed entity.
Thanks, Duarte. If I go back to, the business was founded in the 89-90, initially by myself and Alan Osren. We were out of university, and actually out of articles. And then obviously later on joined by Steve Cohen. If we consider, we built the business. It was a classic startup, bootstrapping, into profitability. So I think, if you look back to the early 90s, late 80s, I don't think there was, there wasn't really this private equity or A series, B series, C series. That didn't exist in the world. And I suppose the only way to, and then as we continue to grow and into profitability, the opportunity arose to expand the business. And the only way to expand the business was to raise some capital. And we thought the best way to do that was via a listing. Now, why did we go through? We were in our mid to late 30s. Did I know really what I was doing? Possibly not. We were advised to go through through a cash shell. On reflection and looking back, as if I was to give advice, I would say that's not the way to go. We should have gone through a front door listing, but possibly. I don't think we met the criteria for a front door listing at that particular point, so it would have delayed the process possibly another year or two. But that was a fast track onto the market, and then as we got onto the market, we were able to raise some capital with the support of the public and institutions, and then embark on a series of acquisitions which helped grow the company. And as you'll know, it was far from perfection to start, because you had a consolidation of, you had a consolidation of companies that were all tech-based but weren't really totally aligned in terms of its mission. So that's how we got going. So we got onto the market in 97. We were advised by those that came in. It was, at the time, it was an attorney, Gerald Rubenstein. He brought a team with him from Nedbank Corporate Finance at the time, and that's what they advised us to do. You know, therein lies the answer. Why did we go through a cash shell? But you're right, because and we didn't realize our timing was good. I mean, you know, timing is timing. It was the growth of a business. So on reflection, your point is valid. It was the time of a listings boom in the tech. So a front door listing would have made sense. Agreed.
I can't remember what the market capitalization of the company was, but I kind of remember it being just below R1 billion. Is that right, Ivan?
I think it was it was less. It was about maybe half of that just to start. And then it ticked up. And then as we started to go, we got into the Allsy at the time. I remember not that long after we entered the Allsy at about a $4.5 billion market cap at some point prior to the share price. Then, you know, then you got into the cycle of the dot-com fallout in the late 90s, early 2000s. And no matter what sector of the industry you were in, you were coupled on the tote in terms of how the world viewed your business, you know, and how the public viewed your business. So if the tech sector was coming off, well, no matter where you sat, if you sat in that sector, you were tagged with that concern by investors. I don't think we truly realized what an amazing sector we were in, because if you think about it, going back to the mid-80s, where it was the formation of the small business accounting software, and that was globally. It was in South Africa, it was in the US, it was in the UK. I mean, it was weird to think as close back as the early 80s that people were still writing up manual set of accounts. It's ludicrous to believe that, you know, if you think back. I mean, it's just, and that gave us the opportunity. And that opportunity's timing was perfect. And the tech sector timing was perfect. So you were in that sweet spot of cycles. But then, you know, to that point, I suppose when you got into the late early 2000s, again, you know, being positioned in the tech sector had negative ramifications for the way people viewed your company and its future. And on reflection, it's just, you know, it's timing. And also a listing, as you know better than I do, and going into a cycle from a private to a public company, you need a lot of patience, and you need to see it very long term. You can't have a short term outlook at this. I'm not sure our long term thinking was as solid as it should have been, because building a business from an entrepreneurial start, you know, you have a lack of patience because everything's rush. And certainly as you're bootstrapping and you're growing a business and you're trying to get footprint. I mean, our objective was to get footprint into the rest of the world, which we did.
Ivan, I guess when you did list, one of the things I liked about the business was the brilliant software. It was proprietary. And then it felt like you had added on a few other businesses to achieve critical mass. But the fact that you had that proprietary accounting software really made you one of the first in South Africa, because the IT companies that were listing or were listed at that stage were mainly vendors or system integrators of our systems. You were a slightly different story with Brilliant. And I think it then, you know, when you acquired Pastel from the Siltec stable, I think that really consolidated your position in that market, and you could actually dispose of the bits and pieces that didn't really fit, that were there just, I guess, to create substance for investors.
Yeah, that was in about 99, Dwight. Yeah, that reorganization into a more mature company was as a result of, as you say, rightly say, disposing, because we were in the PC manufacturing business at that point in time, and I could just, we all felt that the margins were light on hardware. The margins were very solid on software. We also, software was a far more stickier business from a user point of view. Hardware was very commodities based, although there's been some super success stories in the hardware business or in the, at that stage in the 90s, where massive companies were built globally, you know, developing. I mean, you saw that was the era of Dell, when Dell got going, and then look at that success. So, yeah, we decided that we need to consolidate our position, and we were fortunate enough to have acquired Pastel in 99, which gave us critical mass. So what had happened at that point, our turnover came right down, possibly by about 70%, because think about it, you lost that hardware component of the your hardware component of revenue. You replaced it with the software component, but your margins escalated into mid-20s, early 30s. And so you had a smaller revenue business, but a far more stable future business going forward. And I think that was a turning point for the business. And it became, and then it evolved into a pure software company. And the proprietary software certainly was a massive benefit. It still is. If you look at companies today running with proprietary software, I mean, that's the ultimate sticky business, where you've got your users almost for life. They stick with you. Obviously, there's a, you know, people do switch from different applications, and it's a different world today, because today it's all web based, and so you know what everyone's looking for is the ARR. That's what really counts in a business today, the software business, and also the web based businesses. I mean, everything's online today, and it's all tech based. So I think annual recurring revenue and attrition rate and how sticky your customers are, those are the key components of where it is today as well. But yeah, you're right. It was a lucky acquisition. It took time to do it and digest it, and it did give us quite a boothold into the marketplace there. At the time, that was just at the time prior to the acquisition of Pastel. We'd moved on advice from some of the management in the company. We'd moved from a selling basis to a normal recurring license basis. So what happened was, we would typically sell the software. You could have unlimited usage. And then we started to, you know, the whole industry was maturing to, well, how many people use it, charge per user, then charge, and then contract the software. So if you look where the market sits today, well, all the app, you know, all the apps, because most of it's app-based today, it's, that same model was very applicable then, but in a much more less mature manner.
Ivan, in terms of your business and the point, so 97 you listed, maybe talk us through some of your board members. I know somewhere down the track, a gentleman by the name of Barry Schechter joined your board. Controversial in South Africa. I do believe he's passed away recently. I think Rubenstein was your chairman. Perhaps just go give us some insight in terms of your board constituents, who added value, you know, who really helped you in terms of core decisions, taking the business as virtually a startup to what it became, a significant player in the accounting space.
I think, Dwight, I think that it's important to note that people come onto the board for the value they can potentially add to the company and to you. As I said, we were guys in the early 30s to mid-30s, some to later 30s. And I would say those that were appointed to the board were people with solid backgrounds, experience, knowledge. And so they all played a role in some form and manner. And but if I do recall that soon after we listed, not long after, we entered into a transaction with HCI, and that was Marcel Golding and Johnny Copeland at the time, who both joined the board. Marcel then took over the chairmanship not longer, and Gerald was happy to step down to hand it over, because it was the early era of the migration to black economic empowerment at the time. It was classic BEE, and we thought that would be in the best interests of our company. So we did that. Marcel became chairman. And I have to say, they all added value in some form or manner. You know, everybody played their role. Horses for courses, different times. And I think also it gave us a sense of security, having people with experience on the board. And you don't know what you don't know until you know what you know. And then eventually, when you've gone down that road, you can reflect on, well, could it have been better advice here? But, you know, 2020 hindsight's, you know, that cures all that. But doesn't help when you haven't had the 2020 hindsight and you haven't traveled that road. So we're all smart after the facts, aren't we?
I know that you went through the go-go period of the 90s. It was really exciting. As you say, I don't think we appreciated just how exuberant those days were. And then, of course, 2000 came along and you experienced, you know, the depression of the post Y2K experience, and also the down rating of stocks, you know, whereas you couldn't find enough shares for investors after that period. You couldn't give away your shares, and that also was a tough period. I know that you and Softline contemplated a delisting at a point in time. Maybe go through some of those experiences, Ivan.
Yeah, it's not a period I really want to remember favorably, Dwight. So we'll talk briefly on it. We decided when the share price had depreciated significantly from about, I think it was over 12 Rand, and then it came down to the mid. It was about 1 Rand 60, 1 Rand 70. And it was kind of weird, because I couldn't understand, none of us could understand why our profits were increasing at double-digit rates, yet the company was sliding backwards in terms of its ratings. Never. But you were, back to what I said earlier, you were part of the trend that the whole market was looking unfavorably at tech what they called the dot-com fallout at that stage. Now, I think also, I mean, if I'm honest, I believe that there's a lack of maturity on the inside of investors and institutions, because surely, I mean, but maybe in fairness, they didn't see it properly, because if you looked at it today, it would be much more clear and evident, because it's more segmented today. And it made no sense to us, all of us, I remember. And we thought, well, okay. At that stage, we were also looking to migrate. Do you remember when Dimension Data moved their listing from South Africa to the UK? We were looking at the same. There was a ruling passed by the then Minister of Finance, which was, if I recall, it was a 7-point or 9-point rule upon which you could migrate your listing, which we fell within, but for some reason we were turned down. Not sure what political decisions were taken at the time. And we thought, well, that's, you know, at that stage, there was no traction, and we thought we'd buy this back. It's a great business. Management would participate, and we take it forward from there. But that didn't work out, and possibly because we were overambitious the way we pitched it. Again, you know, not sure we picked the price right. And that's when we decided to bring in Sage, who acquired the business. And I always said at the time that I think it was a great loss to South Africa, because this was a homegrown company built in South Africa, developed in South Africa by South Africans, that it was exporting and selling the software in other parts of the world. It was just sad. And I was right, because the company was lost to South Africa, owned by a UK company, Sage, which subsequently we all joined. And today the company's branded Sage. And it still continues to be a very positive and successful organization. very glad about that, that we were able to sell a business that went on to be so positive. But shouldn't have happened. It was probably strategically the wrong move at the time. But then you move forward and you don't look back to what, and the customers are happy. The business is thriving still, and this is many years later. It's 2024 now, and the business was founded in 1990. So we're all proud of what we've achieved and what we, you know, and the legacy we left behind in the country. I think the biggest test of a business is when you sell it or you move it on, does it continue to be as successful without the founders? If it does continue to be as successful, even more successful, well, I think there's the founders were able to do something right in terms of succession, solid business, and a proper and a real solid business model.
100% agree with you, Ivan, in terms of, you know, the lost treasures that we keep giving away to the foreigners at the wrong price. Dimension Data was given away to NTNT, and even the Dimension Data brand is busy disappearing in the local market. No, Softline, as I say, also, you know, a pioneer in its time. The software exists. The software sits as part of Sage. What did Sage? What was the buyout price? I don't recall that Sage bought.
If I recall, I think it was two rand twenty, just under 220. It was a price of 850 million. The business was well capitalized with cash. We had a big cash balance at the time. It was an absolute nick for Sage. It was a great deal. I remember when we tried to do the buyback, and there were two banks involved in the potential buyback, and I said to them, and we were struggling with calculations. Well, they were struggling with it, and they said, well, I don't think you'll pay this business back within 5 years. We said, of course we would. I mean, look at the cash flows. They said, no, it could possibly take you 8 years, and then they re-ran calcs, and then the timing, and as we were so far into the transaction, the reason why it went, the market turned and sentiment picked up. And it was the same time there were two other delistings. It was MB Technologies and Nando's at the time, the three of us. I remember it well. And the guy said, oh, we'll all get it away. And I said, you know, we have 60% of our revenue coming from offshore. I'm not so sure we'll get it away. And I mean, if you look at that pricing, Sage, I think, Duarte, that business was paid itself back to Sage within 2¾ years in cash. So, you know, it's to your point earlier about assets in South Africa. And still today, there's underpriced assets. It doesn't make sense.
Well, today, even worse, because I think with our pension funds moving their money offshore, they're leaving treasure troves behind. But Ivan, maybe let's talk a little bit about your Sage years. I mean, I think testimony to the fact that of the quality of the management team. I mean, there are some famous IT companies that were acquired and the executives were not brought on board. That tells you one story. But when an overseas entity acquires a South African entity and brings management on board, integrates them and really reaches out to them in terms of the value add, that tells you a story that is more than just about the software. It tells you about the quality of you and your team. And so I have worked for an international organization. I know that it's not all a bed of roses. Maybe guide us through how you were integrated into Sage, what your role was, and what the experience was. Because being an entrepreneur and owning your own shop and now finding that you're kind of owned by someone else is a very, very different experience.
Was a different experience. I was surprised how well we all adapted, even surprised myself. But it was a great experience. The guys were a very similar story to ours, started a business many years ago. Probably they started 10 years before us. Weren't that large at the time we did the acquisition, or they did the acquisition. Joined them straight away. Sage had luck with the head of Global Exco, joined the team. I became head of the international division. So what you had three divisions there. You had the USA, you had Europe, UK, and then you had the rest of the world, which was the international. And there were three of us that landed up running the Sage group, and I was lucky to be a part of that. The rest of the team back in South Africa thrived. They also loved it. Alan went off to Australia. That was in the early stages when we did some acquisitions there, and he built an incredible business in Australia. Steve remained in South Africa. He helped develop the business tremendously in South Africa. He was head of the Pastel Group, which did exceptionally well. And I was off spending a lot of time in the UK, primarily up in Newcastle. And it was a fabulous era. It was surprisingly, we adapted well at what? I mean, because how do you go from once starting a business, you know, very entrepreneurial, man, and then having to adapt to the disciplines of a public environment, but with autonomy to some degree, and then from taking the next leap into now being acquired by a much larger organization, and then having to adapt to a very corporate, well, that was corporate, it was entrepreneurially corporate. That changed in later years, and that's when I decided to move on. It was tough at first, was tough, and then it was, and then it became fun. And then you were building this. And today, Sage, their share price has done exceptionally well. They're doing good stuff. I'm not in contact with the guys really anymore. I've moved on. I left in 2016. What they call retirement, it's just the term they use. You know, I see you got a shock when I say retirement. But that's the term, as you know, that's utilized. So, yeah, great. I mean, their market cap is significant today. And the South African, Australian, I think that was sold off subsequent. Certain other parts, we gave them a business in Canada, the USA. We had two divisions. And, it's a positive story. It's a great outcome for all. Everybody benefited. I think had we not done that, we would still be listed today in South Africa.
Yeah. Were you, was the team incentivized with ownership at the holding company level?
Yeah, all the team was incentivized to some degree at the holding level. And, it was a very happy place and a very happy environment, both in South Africa, in the UK. And I remember, with a Sage cap on, we had 28 countries. We were running close to 15,000 employees. We had dominant market shares in Spain, Portugal, France, the UK, of course, Australia, South Africa, and a reasonably strong market presence in the US. So it was a very happy place, great environment, fun, hardworking, successful. So I enjoyed that period, I have to say. And then it was time to move on and do something else.
Over that period, I presume you didn't spend too much time in South Africa.
I did spend a lot of time, but there was a lot of time spent in the UK, and that's when I started to get to enjoy the UK and understand it from a commercial standpoint.
But 2016 was not the retirement that you speak of. You've not hung up your gloves at this point in time. I know that you were the founder of the Connection Group, was it not? Tell us how you failed at your retirement.
Yeah. You know what they say, Dwight, about retirement? You never get a day off, so you can't be retired. You know that. So lucky enough, along the way, through one of the acquisitions, I was able to meet one of the businesses we bought in the UK. It was a person named Peter Nagel, who built a successful software company. He'd actually sold the business to us, but he built his own successful business in the UK. And it was him and his team that helped us in the early years transform to a license model. These guys had developed this model already in the UK. So post 2016, I got involved with Peter as well in a venture. and still involved with him today, a very close friend and business partner of mine. But back in the mid-20s, I met a guy called Stephen Halbron, who was the former CEO of the private bank in the UK, Investec. Stephen had just left Investec. He'd returned to live in South Africa. We found a business. It was a very small business called Cash Connect at the time, which used to recycle cash in the retail sector. And Steve got involved. He went in as the CEO. I went in as the non-exec chairman. And together, I mean, he really built the business. I sat on the side as the chairman, and obviously giving my input where necessary. And we scaled that business and built it. And that business was sold in 2022 to what was NetOne, and now called Lesaka. And that was a very successful 7 years. A lot of credit goes to Stephen for the way he built and scaled that business. And I really enjoyed that journey with him. And we became very
Correct me if I'm wrong, Ivan. I think that disposal was north of 3 billion rand, 3.5 billion rand disposal to Lesaka.
There was debt in the business as well. It was a, but one of the key acquisitions was about 2 years before we sold it, we bought a business in South Africa. It was one of the acquisitions. And that really helped bolster the group. And Steve led that acquisition. And, I mean, it was interesting to watch him operate because it was a different experience. And a lot of innovation. It was in the fintech sector. And that whole sector was moving fast, right, and still moving fast, as you know. I mean, and certainly from an African context, you know, the scale of it in Africa is pretty amazing. And it's amazing to see the early adoption of the technology, because often South Africa, it's not just South Africa, but Africa can leapfrog the rest of the world because nothing's being used and suddenly something's being used. So you take the tech a step ahead of where it's deployed in other countries. And so I think Africa offers wonderful opportunities for the fintech sector and still continues to. So again, the timing was reasonably good. It was very risky to start the business, and then it stabilized. And it was an entrepreneurial risk. And that's, you know, and that was, it was great. It was wonderful.
Well, I mean, you can do it once, but you've done it a couple of times, you know, actually being entrepreneurial and, you know, in the tech space. I know you talk about being lucky and the timing being right, but I think it was Bill Gates who was asked, you know, how did you make a success? And he said, I jumped at the right time. When someone asked him, how did you know when to jump? He said, I didn't. I just kept jumping. And I think testimony to you and the people that you've surrounded, you know, you have a nose for a good opportunity, but you've also got the tenacity that an entrepreneur needs to have to convert opportunity into reality. And actually also finally being able to liquidate a position and make a profit, because the latter, so many good ideas never actually realize a profit. But, you know, you've demonstrated your ability throughout the cycle, whether it's the creation, the working through and the hard effort of knuckling down and creating a base, and then actually on selling it to someone else. And the beauty is that in both instances that we've cited here, you didn't dispose of a business that isn't gone on to better things. You know, so the sign of a great sale is where both parties are beneficiaries.
Yeah, it was. It has gone on to do very well under the Lesaka stable, and Stephen stayed on to fulfill some obligations he wanted to do, and he's doing a great job with him now. So I'm really pleased about that. They're able to benefit from it. Yeah, so that's great. But, Dwight, so that's been interesting. And, you know, it's But you learn from your mistakes, because you say that, you know, what's interesting, behind one or two successes, there's loads of errors. But one never really talks about the errors. And that goes for most people you'll discuss it with. I mean, so, but every learning is a lesson, you know, for growth going forward, as we all know that.
Now, Ivan, I know that you have relocated more to the UK, that you're spending most of your time in the UK. I'm not sure that I can use the word that you've emigrated, but you certainly migrated to spend most of your time in the UK. And I know mainly for family reasons, but what comes now? Because, again, you know, you're too young, you're too dynamic, and to just not be active again. What are you busy on today?
So we're busy, as I said, I was lucky enough to meet Peter some years ago and many years ago, and together we've invested. We're in the media sector, so in tech, actually media tech, and so we're involved in a visual effects and animation studios, which it's very tech-based, building full-featured animated movies for the studios, and that's fun and enjoyable. I'm not involved day-to-day in that business, and then we set up a new business, so we're in the immersive experience business as well, taking from art to experiences, or to, you know, legacy art as well, not only just, you know, futuristic stuff, it's also legacy and general live experiences, and translating them into immersive experiences for people. So that's an early stage business. We're still developing it. And we continue to invest in some small ways in some businesses. And some will do well. You know, not all will do well. But certainly not, it'd be too far to go to call it private equity. It's not private equity by no means. It's just where we take a position and we active in the business in helping to direct and channel the business. But inside that business is a solid management team.
Ivan, I know that notwithstanding that you operate in the international markets, you're a true blue South African like myself. And, you know, we were fortunate enough to kind of see the innovation of the 80s and the creation of tech in the 90s and a real development coming out of this country. What's your, you know, this country is obviously facing a lot of challenges, but so much talent, so much opportunity. Your advice to tech businesses in South Africa, you know, how and does one navigate the new challenges, the old challenges, and really capitalize on the innovation that is still prevalent in this country? What would be your pearls of wisdom for those entrepreneurs of the next 20 years to take heed of?
It's an interesting one, Dwight. Firstly, I remember just I think I met you, it was in 97. It was the day of the listing, correct? It was the day of the reversal into that. So you were the first aeronautical engineer. No, you were an aeronautical engineer, and you had a PhD in aeronautics at the time. And I thought, oh, this will be, how am I going to face this guy's questions? And so if you take, like, from that early stage, meeting guys like yourself, and then, as you say, you meet loads and loads of people on the way up through the journey, and you learn lessons from the people, you take energy from the people. By definition, one, I'm an optimist, I'd say, Dwight, and I like to be optimistic and try to see the future to as much as you can. Like anyone else, definitely made a number of mistakes. But that's part of the learnings of creating some success. What's interesting to see is, having spent lots of time in the UK now, is the level of entrepreneurship in South Africa is amazing. And I see it more than ever. There's just this can-do attitude there. There's a can-do psych. People aren't scared to take risk. People aren't scared to move forward. I think in a more regulated environment like I am here, people question before they do something. I mean, there are, I mean, there are loads of super successful entrepreneurs here, but it's a very different environment. So going back to South Africa and your question is, some of the tech coming out of South Africa is incredible. And there's something about, you know, the attitude of people there. So I think a lot of that tech can be deployed in other parts of the world. And as we've seen, it is. It's always refreshing to be with a South African entrepreneur. And possibly because I come from there and I am South African. So you feel it more than ever. And it's, I mean, it's where you grew up, and it's, and I spend a lot of time there still. But there's, I would say that anybody who's willing to start a business there, and South Africa is a feeding ground for entrepreneurship. It's just the very nature of society. It's the nature of the environment. And people are more urgent there in South Africa than they are in other parts. So I think for people involved in, and I'm talking purely tech businesses, but I suppose this applies across the board to many other sectors, is, yeah, I would pursue those opportunities. Those opportunities are amazing. And there are, and there is opportunity to migrate those technologies and address. I mean, throughout the internet, I mean, it's a completely different landscape, 2024 versus 1990. It's not even comparable, you know. And I watch the, and when I speak to a lot of guys in their 20s, startups and that, it's incredible to see what they've done. And these guys are moving at a different pace. And so it's, I mean, and they've got such positive attitudes, and they, there's this belief that can take on the world. You see it. I mean, you meet a lot of people. You've seen it yourself. I've never seen such a great level of self-confidence and belief. I think that's fantastic. And I think that's it. I mean, why would you lose that if you've got it? Yeah. I think South Africa, it gives you a lot of confidence. It's a confident, to me, it's a confidence booster. That's how I felt, you know. I think I'm very, we're all fortunate to have come out of that environment. Obviously, it has its ups and its downs, and it's going through a challenging period at the moment. But then so many other countries around the world, I think the world's in a very challenging place at the moment. So one could say, oh, well, it's just South Africa. Not really. It's challenging everywhere. We find ourselves in a very different environment. It must be quite difficult for people coming out of university now, looking at the world, and, you know, but those positive and optimistic people will create the opportunity. I mean, and you just look at some of the successes that have come out of South Africa. We spoke earlier, you know, talking about a Tesla. I mean, look, that's an incredible success. I mean, it's unbelievable. But that's one in, you know, billions. But there are many cases of positive entrepreneurs. And, yeah, I mean, I'm sure you faced on a weekly basis, and you presented with opportunities to look at, advise on, talk about. And I think it's time to, you know, cultivate that next generation and help them, you know. The same way we were helped back in the late 90s, you know, it's now our time to help that same crowd that are also building up and going. So I do like it when I'm presented with an opportunity to be able to give some advice.
Thank you, Ivan. And last question is, I'm sure you still buy and sell some shares for your own personal portfolio. What's your top tech share that you own in your portfolio at the moment in the world?
I'm not a great stock market investor, and I'm not a great, but I mean, you got to look at a company like Apple and say it's special. I mean, it's just, and I mean, I haven't, not that I'm a great investor, but I mean, you just think of your own portfolio of gadgets. What do you use on a daily basis? iPods, iPhone. So I look at a company like that, and you know, if I'm a user, you know. I don't know. It's difficult, you know. It's difficult, but I would look at a company like the Apples. I can't comment on companies like Tesla. I don't know where that whole EV market's going. It's changing. It's I mean, new entrants coming in every day. Certainly, you know, up here you see, I mean, every second car is an EV, and it's from Mercedes to BMW to Audi. So it's quite a flooded market. But so that market I can't comment about, but certainly. And then you look at some of the large, you know, large banks in the US also, you know, some of the private equity players. I mean, they've done amazing stuff. The kind of returns they've given. But Dwight, you're probably best to answer that yourself, because I think you've got an eye for those type of investments. And you know, you would have done your homework before you invest.
Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no. But Ivan, thank you very much. I really appreciate that you've taken this time out of your busy schedule. You know, it's been really great for me to reconnect with you. It was a privilege to meet you in the 90s, even though I was a cocky youngster in those days. I really appreciate the people that I've met in that era, like yourself. I really admire what you've gone on to achieve and accomplish. And Ivan, really, I think you're one of South Africa's ambassadors out there. And keep doing what you're doing, and don't forget about us at the tip of the continent. Thank you very much, Ivan.
Thank you, and well done to you for what you've achieved. And I think it's now 30 years since I first met you. Just under 30 years, and it's great to reconnect with you and spend some time. I don't think you were the only one who you feel that was cocky. I think we were all at that stage, you know. And I think I gave you some early aggravation as an analyst, but we all got through it. We've moved on, and it's good to get to know you again. Thank you.